Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. Had a little garbled audio issue there to start with. Hopefully, we're coming through loud and clear now. Blame that garbled audio on Hugh. Hugh is our producer. We're going to blame everything on Hugh. Everything that doesn't work out right. So this is Well Armed Radio. I think this has got to be our fifth or sixth broadcast. Tonight's going to be a test of flying by the seat of my pants. I had had a dance recital practice today. My daughter has a hip hop class, so I had the fortunate distinction of being able to do the father-daughter dance, and I thought this is going to be cool. You know, maybe we'll do some waltz or maybe a two-step if I was lucky. I could handle that, but no, I have to do hip-hop. She's 7 years old, does hip-hop for her dance class, and that's what I got stuck doing. So just finished rehearsal, started at 5. I thought, oh, no problem. I usually take about an hour to prep for the show in addition to the prep I do midweek. But so this is going to be a test of rolling and thinking on my feet here today. But thanks for joining us. Hopefully we have a good show coming up. You'll be the judge of that. Maybe at the end of the show I'll make my own judgment of how well the show went. Topic for today, we're going to go over a couple of things. First, late-breaking news here this past Friday. Illinois passed a concealed carry law, so we're going to talk about that some. We have Valinda Rowe, who's a spokesperson for Illinois Carry. She will bring us up to speed on everything going on down there in Illinois with their concealed carry law. I won't jump the gun on the topic there, but some interesting stuff coming from Illinois. And then a couple other topics we're going to go through. Second Amendment hypocrites. That should be a good one. Talk about people who say they support the Second Amendment and really don't. Might tick some people off with that topic. And then we're going to talk about posted businesses. Go through some discussion of what you do with posted businesses. Do you patronize them? Do you not? You know, what do you do when your gun isn't welcome? A lot of differing opinions on those. I've talked to people who, you know, make the argument that concealed is concealed and what they don't know won't hurt them. And some people carry into posted businesses. And obviously there's other people who just from a principled standpoint don't want to patronize people who don't support the Second Amendment. And for that reason, avoid posted businesses. And then there's some other people who, I think it's a little bit of a gray area. Sometimes there's people you might know from that work in a posted business, and it wasn't their decision, maybe the owner's decision. And then if we have time, I'm going to get to my off-topic. I love going off-topic, but I'm going to go to how Wall Street destroys American industry and how we help them do it. I say how you help them do it on the pre-show announcements, but really it's how we help them do it. I think it's a topic that people find interesting. I do a lot of investing, and I think people will find that to be an interesting discussion, probably some information that, you know, some people might have considered and be aware of, and it's probably something that's new for other people. The, you know, people who do a lot of investing, and for them it might be some new information as well. To start with, I want to introduce, as this show is moving on up in the world, we now have a call screener. So we have a producer and a call screener now. And with that, I'm going to introduce you to Dan. Dan is our call screener. So, Dan, welcome to the show.
Thanks.
And I can hear, you must have the computer up because I can hear a little bit of us in the background, so a little echo going there. So thanks for, Dan is going to be our call screener, so when you call in, I don't know what's the good pejorative description for a call screener, the axe man. If he doesn't like your comment, you're out of here. But good to have you on.
I didn't tell you to turn your radio down.
As I just told you, shame on you. That's two raps on the knuckles. So I talked to Dan about an hour ago, and Dan, you don't sing, do you, by any chance?
No singing for me.
The when I was stuck at this dance recital rehearsal, I thought with no show prep, I don't know how I'm going to fill the show. So I thought maybe if you were a good singer or something, you could fill some time for me. No luck there.
Only vanilla ice.
So we're going to send Dan off to the abyss. Maybe before we do, Dan and I are going to work together. Everything that happens wrong with this show, we're going to blame on Hugh, the producer. So if you tuned in a couple weeks ago, you'll know about Hugh. Hugh is our producer. Sits on the other side of glass for me. I can see him in the glass right now, but he doesn't have a microphone, so that's better. Hugh doesn't have anything good to say. So we'll keep him behind the glass, and we'll send Dan away here in a minute. Dan, if you want to get Valinda on the line, and we'll jump into her in probably about 5 minutes. I told her we'd be calling about 8:20, so maybe we'll fill for a couple more minutes here. But I'll put you on, back in the screening room, and we'll get Valinda on the phone and let me know when we got her, and we'll move forward.
All right, sounds good.
So that's Dan. Dan's the guy you'll be talking to as you call into the show, and I hope you do. I hope we get some callers into the show to participate in the topics. Dan suggested, with my lack of time for show prep today, maybe we could do open line. I wonder if that's what radio talk show hosts do. I wonder if they do those open lines. I think Rush Limbaugh does open lines on Fridays. I wonder if that's what they do when they don't want to do show prep. They just have an open line show where they can respond to everything that people say when they call in. So we'll see how we do today. Maybe we'll give that a shot one of these days. But I'm interested to hear your feedback, both on the topics that we'll talk about today. And certainly, I think we will do some open line, if not today, soon. But also, you're more than welcome to email the show at wellarmedradio.wi.rr.com, or excuse me, wellarmedradio@wi.rr.com. And if you have any topics you'd like us to cover, things you'd like to discuss, or if you just want to tell me the show sucks, that's a great way to do it. wellarmedradio@wi.rr.com. If you want to call into the show, 646-716-8739 is the phone number, 646-716-8739. Studios out of New York, that's where that phone number you call would be out of. I broadcast from my home studio here in New Berlin. But definitely feel free to call in. I know some people Skype into that number when they call, that 646 number, 646. If you're from the Blog Talk Radio, Well-Armed Radio page, you'll see that phone number at the top of the screen, the call-in number. So definitely feel free to call in, voice your opinion, and maybe we'll do some open line and just take straight calls. So I see Dan has Valinda on hold here. So the right to carry in Illinois, you know, sitting here and I'm going to bring Valinda in a second here, but sitting here in Wisconsin, oftentimes we, oops, I think I lost her. We'll blame that one on Hugh as well. But hopefully we'll get Valinda back on the line here shortly. I don't know how she dropped off, but in Illinois, you know, sitting here in Wisconsin, I have a, you know, there's a pejorative perception sometimes of Illinois as we see the influence of Chicago politics. And I keep dropping her, Dan. I'm not sure why. Every time I try to switch over, she drops off. So I'll try to figure that one out here quick. But as I was saying, every time I see, you know, my impression of Illinois is so often dictated by what we see coming out of Chicago politics. And that's probably not fair in some respects because, you know, there's a whole larger subset of population south of the border here in Wisconsin from Illinois who have a completely different perspective, a completely different principled stand and principled viewpoint than what happens in Cook County. That said, it's such a large population center that certainly it has a huge effect on Illinois legislation. Just the effect of the Chicago politicians down in Springfield. But I know there's a lot of people out of the state that are not in Chicago who share the same freedom-minded beliefs that we do. The same perspective on right to carry. And you know, as I'm looking here and we're waiting to get Valinda back in line, you know, Dan, if you want to, I would try having her just give her the call-in number and have her call in. It's not picking up when I click over, it drops her. So if you want to try to give Valinda, spokesperson from Illinois Carry, maybe if you give her that number, have her call in the guest call in number. We'll see if we can get her through that way. But yeah, that's you know. So I wanted to bring Valinda on the show to get her perspective on the legislation that just passed this past Friday down in the State House, and also get her perspective on, you know, right to carry. And the history of legislation there in Illinois. Certainly the history of right to carry in that state is not good. I think it's the last state that doesn't allow concealed carry. So we're still having a hard time getting her on the phone. So seems to be, and I'm having a hard time with my audio as well. So hopefully we've got all of our technical issues working through here today. I'm also monitor the chat. If you go to the Blog Talk Radio page, there's a chat, a flash chat option there that we monitor. So if you're listening on the flash chat, definitely let me know if you can hear me okay. I'm having a hard time hearing myself right now. So I see we've got some of our listeners there. I see Kurt, and Kurt's listening. Kurt, let us know if you can hear us okay. But hopefully we can get Valinda on. If we can't, we'll have to jump into some other subjects here. But it'll be interesting to speak with her because there's a lot of different speculation of what would be best for Illinois. I know some people feel that if they don't pass a law, that would be the optimal thing because then they would revert to constitutional carry. But I think Linda would have some different perspective to share on that. So it looks like we're having technical issues in getting her on the line. So I think what I'll do is I'm going to jump through to another topic, and we'll see if we can get her on a little bit later in the show. The second thing I wanted to, this piece of of audio. Actually, it was a video, came to me earlier this week. Thought I'd share it with the group. This audio is from a testimony given in New Jersey. And sometimes when it comes to right to carry and the Constitution, you know, I sit back and I think it's hard to say things that haven't already been said before. We've all heard the same points. We all know the facts and have repeated them over and over. But every once in a while, I hear a good one, something that just hits a home run, something that puts a bullseye, you know, dead center from 100 yards away and fouls it up with another round right through that same hole. I don't know if there's a word for that. I mean, you know, double tap it. It's not the right word, but there's got to be a word for when you zip two rounds through the same hole of a target. But this is one of those audio clips. Again, total bullseye. I wanted to play it for the Well-Armed Radio audience today. This is Nora Craig. She's testifying at a hearing in New Jersey about gun control legislation. I'm going to play this clip for you now and listen to Nora Craig.
I do not respect an oath breaker. Anybody who's holding a public office has taken the oath to defend the Constitution of the United States. That does not mean you put how you feel first, how you emotionally react to a tragedy first, because you think it's better that I will be safer, you abrogate my constitutional rights. That's breaking your oath, and I have no respect for that. Mom, and there's only one thing that I'm afraid of, and that's the people in elected office taking away my rights. I'm not afraid of the crook that's going to come to my door, because if my dogs don't get him, I will, and it's my job to defend myself. It's not your job to protect me. It's not your job to defend me. It's your job to protect the Constitution and protect my rights to defend myself.
So there you have it. That's Nora Craig. That was testimony she gave to the New Jersey legislature. Not the full, obviously, probably a committee hearing. You know, they have the public hearings. And I heard that earlier this week, and I thought that was just phenomenal. I mean, I love it when, and I say this facetiously, I love it when us lowly average law-abiding citizens put the 20 politicians in their place. So way to go, Nora. The only problem is too many politicians don't have a conscience, nor principles. And not just principles. They don't have principles that they have challenged and validated with logic and fact. Instead, they have this big emotion factory and an internal campaign manager in their head driving their every action. And everything that comes out of their mouth is based upon feelings and how they perceive they can hold on to their office. And that is all too often driven by media instead of true constituent feedback. I mean, let's be honest. For most spineless politicians, news media drives them. I mean, this is true of even local elected officials. People have a relatively small circle of friends and associates. Politicians, with respect to their entire constituency, still have a very small circle of people they actually come into contact with. I mean, in terms of gauging feelings and beliefs of a larger subset of their constituency that they never actually talk to, they look to news media. So even local news media can misrepresent an issue. You could have 100 people on one side of a local issue and 30 on another, and the local news gives equal time, if you're lucky, in the interest of fairness. They give equal time to both sides. And if you're unlucky, which is more often the case when you're on the gun rights side of the issues, you'll get spin that reflects the editor and reporter's personal biases. You know, it's unavoidable, but that's human nature. So, you know, when Nora in New Jersey, you know, just puts the politicians in her place with that comment, I mean, it really says so much about where our legislature has gone and the problems with how our form of government works. I mean, and I do think our form of government works, but you know, when we have these career politicians is such a cliche, but we have these politicians who are, they are career politicians, but they're full. I mean, that's their job, and I think our, you know, it was intended that legislators would not be full-time. I mean, initially, you know, we and it's still the case in some places. Texas, for example, the legislature's I think the salary for a legislator is like $7,000 for a state senator or something like that. I mean, it's minimal. And those people have to go hold on to full-time jobs. And I think that's what our constitutional framers really intended. Now we have, you know, politicians who spend all of their time, and Washington, D.C. is the worst. They spend all their time in Washington, D.C. So keeping in touch with your constituents and really communicating with a large percent of those who are in your district, whatever district that may be. I mean, it could be a local aldermanic district. It could be a mayoral district. It could be an assembly district, Senate district, not to mention, you know, statewide races, and then certainly, you know, your federal offices. It's hard work to actually communicate with a representative number of your constituents, and that's why most politicians don't do it. I mean, instead, they watch the news. And if you know the saying, if you don't watch the news, you're uninformed. If you do watch the news, you're misinformed. And that's true. Politicians seem to gauge public opinion through news media to a large extent. And that's why it's hard to keep even freedom-minded politicians from going squishy on rights issues. I mean, that said, the further removed a politician is from their district, the more they seem to be swayed by media. I mean, send a politician to D.C., they become more disconnected from their constituents, which they weren't very connected with to begin with, and look how squishy they become. You sit in D.C., you're not mingling, you're not out working a job in your district. And what do? You turn on the news at night and you see Washington, D.C. media or national news media, if you're watching your cable national program, and they lose touch with their constituents. I mean, certainly they have offices back here, but very few people reach out to the legislators. So, I mean, that's where these politicians can become so squishy. And this is what our founding fathers didn't intend for public service, you know, to be a career, because when you spend all your time in D.C., you're out of touch with your constituents. When all you see is D.C. and national media, I mean, which at best portrays things as a 50-50 proposition every time, and that's at best. I mean, typically slants them to the political views of the editors and reporters, which are hugely anti-gun for the most part. It's no wonder that they get squishy. But I will say this. That's what I love about right to carry and gun rights. Gun rights are really a breakwater right. They are the front line of the battle for freedom. They test a politician's ability. They test anyone's ability to let fact and logic triumph over emotion and knee-jerk reaction. Gun rights so clearly demonstrate what we really have, that we really have a government of the people or a government that rules the people. I mean, that's what the gun is. I've talked about this before in the program, but the gun is equality. The gun is freedom, and guns in the hand of the population assure us that we, the people, have the power, not government. When the Second Amendment fails, there's no doubt in my mind there is no longer a break wall, figuratively and realistically, to protect the rest. If the Second Amendment fails, it will mean that emotion and fear-mongering triumphed reality and logic. And if we lose our Second Amendment rights, debate and public policy aside, we'll have lost our tangible ability to defend our own freedom, but don't get it back. So, you know, you go, Nora, that was the best audio I heard all week. And just coming from, and I say this again, just a lowly law-abiding citizen, just like the rest of us. So I hope we've got Valinda back on the line, and I'm going to cross my fingers and hope that we get her live here. Valinda, hello. Are you with us? Valinda,
how
are you?
I am here.
Well, good. I think five broadcasts in to my radio program now. I think this is our fifth week, and first time using a call screener. Dan's helping me out, so it's good to have you on. I'm glad that I was worried that for a minute that we were going to get it through to you. So I wanted to, you and I met a few years ago, two or three years ago, and we've kept in touch with the rights issues and gun rights. I think the last time that the first time we met in person was probably 2011 at the Second Amendment Foundation's National Conference there in Illinois, which was the first time we met. And so I thought that you'd be a good person to have on and share with us. You know, sometimes when we sit here in Wisconsin, so much of what we hear and think, our perceptions of Illinois, is completely based upon what happens in Chicago. And I know that that's not the case, that Chicago is not representative of the larger population of the state. But maybe to kind of start us off, if you would just give us a brief background on Illinois Carry and your role with Illinois Carry.
Well, Nick, it's great to be here. And you say we met in 2011 at the Gun Rights Policy Conference that's sponsored by the Second Amendment Foundation. But I have been following progress in Wisconsin for years because, you know, for the longest time, we would say there were only two states left that did not have right to carry, and hopefully we'll beat Wisconsin. But we didn't. You beat us to the punch. But Illinois Carry was founded by a gentleman back in 2004 when the right to carry laws really were sweeping the country. And he was, you know, concerned that Illinois was going to get left behind. And he was very interested in the issue. And it, so Illinois Carry started out and is still today an online action and discussion forum that's statewide and now countrywide that is dedicated to seeing a right to carry law passed in the state of Illinois. And this last Friday, thank goodness, our Illinois General Assembly passed a carry law. It's now will go to the governor. We do not know if he will sign it into law or not, but a bill was passed.
And so going from there, you know, and I know here in Wisconsin, I think, you know, the right to carry and the concealed carry legislation really fired up around 2002, 2003. You know, just real briefly, what kinds of action and or inaction, you know, have you guys had with your legislation? Where, you know, did you get close with legislation ever? You know, just give us a brief history of where you guys have stood for the past, you know, 15 or 20 years while you've watched other states get concealed carry.
I think the last time before this year that a carry bill came up for a vote. They were introduced every year, but to come up for a vote, I think, was like 18 or 19 years ago, almost two decades, and strong opposition because the influence from Chicago and Cook County, which is so anti-gun, those votes from that heavily populated area basically outweighed the rest of the state. So when we began doing our town hall meetings were really a turning point for the issue here in the state of Illinois. We started going from community to community, county to county, doing town hall meetings, educating people about what right to carry is. And we started in the areas that were pro-gun, but really didn't know that much about right to carry. They didn't realize that all these other states were passing carry laws. And then we kind of gained all that area throughout the state, and then we got down to our target area, which was Cook County in Chicago. And so for about the last 3 or 4 years, that has been our focus, our town hall meetings, our educational events, our women's self-defense events and things like that were in Cook County, Chicago, educating the public about what right to carry is and how Illinois was the only state left. And things really began to turn at that point when we got into that area and could focus all of our energy and resources in educating the people in that northeast quadrant of the state.
And I'm gonna go to Illinois, or to Cook County in a minute, but before we do, just to kind of round out the landscape here, unlike Wisconsin, you know, Wisconsin had open carry, legal open carry, which was relatively easy to practice. You know, you had to watch out for the gun-free school zones. But and having you on, see, this is what I think all good radio talk show hosts do. Instead of researching a topic, they just have an expert like you come on. So I wanted to, because I didn't research Illinois' their history on gun laws. Rather, I just figured I'll have you come on and save me the time. Tell me about, you have a concealed carry. Do you have a concealed carry ban? What's been in place? Is it a concealed carry ban? Is it a ban on any kind of carry?
There is no loaded carrying of a firearm in the state of Illinois at present. When the ban went into effect, there's no open carry, there's no concealed carry. The only way you can carry is unloaded, completely enclosed in a case, and you have to have a valid FOID card. In some municipal and county ordinances, they go a step beyond that, and the firearm has to either be broken down or inaccessible. So, and the charges for carrying a loaded firearm, either on your person or in your vehicle, is a felony.
And that's
there was a total blanket ban on the right to carry a loaded firearm for personal protection. When the town hall meetings and our Illinois Gun Owner Lobby Days, or IGOLD, if anybody's heard of that, when those started, a movement for pro Second Amendment county resolution sprang up out of IGOLD, and 91 counties in Illinois passed a resolution in support of the Second Amendment and the right to carry, and there's 102 counties. So,
there's a legislative ban on carry. What year does that date from? Do you know?
It was back in, I can't remember. It was in the 70s.
Okay.
79, maybe, something like that.
And not to be glib, but I mean, you can hunt in Illinois. So when you hunt, that's obviously, the law has exceptions for hunting with the long gun.
Right. And that's through the Department of Natural Resources. They have their own statutes that regulate hunting. And the firearm has to be cased, and you can't, once you put it in your vehicle, you can't drive from hunting spot to hunting spot without unloading and all of that.
Yep. Tell us about, so now let's go back to Chicago and Cook County. We, I sit here and I understand how much influence Chicago has on the legislation for the whole state. So maybe give us just an idea. I mean, you did with the number of counties. I presume that outside of Chicago, you get away from the Chicagoland area. And I mean, you've got some very freedom-minded folks down there.
Yes, we do. And I think that support is what helped propel us into the northeast quadrant of the state. Once we had built up all of this support all throughout the state, and then we could focus, all of our time and resources on that. It was because we had gained the support of the rest of the state, and they were pushing behind us, to get this change. They were talking to their legislators. And so we had the support of all these legislators except for a representative in Rockford and one in Champaign. We had the support of all the legislators basically outside the Cook County area. And so then they started putting pressure then, came to bear on Chicago and Cook County legislators, say, hey, my people want this. People in my district want this. We need you guys to get on board with this.
And tell me, so then now we have the Seventh Circuit decision, which was, I want to say, February of this past year, January, February. And basically that said that the carry ban was unconstitutional, and it gave Illinois 180 days basically to pass a concealed carry law.
Yes, that ruling came out December the 11th of 2012, 180 days, and we are at 7 days and counting.
And I've heard up on this side of the border some people say that, they hope that that nothing was passed, thinking that if nothing passed, then they would have what some people term constitutional carry. But share a little perspective on that.
Okay. If that truly were the case, that if the clock ran out, then that statewide we would have constitutional carry, I believe that all of the gun rights organizations in the state would say, yes, let's just hold the clock. Let's just run out the clock and let that happen. But that's not what would happen, because true constitutional carry is when a state's legislature recognizes the right to keep and bear arms without a license or permit. And so in that instance, then local and county governments, units of government, cannot put restrictions or regulations on that right. And what would happen in Illinois if the clock runs out and no law is passed? We would have what we're calling court carry, which means the court would say you cannot have a blanket ban, a total blanket ban on the right to carry. But that's all the ruling would pertain to. So all of these 200 and something plus home rule entities would be able to put whatever restrictions and regulations on that right that they want to. Just last week, we got a copy of the proposed carry ordinances that Cook County was going to pass. And it was a $300 license fee for like 3 years, I guess, or so, and 40 hours of training, hardly any carry at all. Everything was deemed like a safe zone where you could not carry. It was a gun safe zone. So, and then we would have this all throughout the state any county, any municipality that had home rule would be able to set up their own regulations, their own license. So you might get a license to carry in Peoria, but it wouldn't be good in Kankakee County. Or you could get a Kankakee County license, but it wouldn't be good in Cook County. So that's what we would have. We would not have true constitutional carry. Another step beyond that is if we ran the clock out and it went to court carry, it would not stay that way forever. It would just stay that way until the legislature got some form of carry law passed.
Gotcha. And I think I had a few technical glitches about 20 seconds into your last answer, and you just popped back in for a few minutes or for the last few seconds there. So just to kind of recap, and that was like the heart of the question I was waiting to ask you.
Okay, I didn't know it.
And I apologize because I think it's a hardware issue on my end, but basically what you had said, and again, you popped right back in there at the end, is if the clock had ran out, you would have had a patchwork of laws all across the state where one particular municipality would have had one law and another municipality another, and that would have just been chaos.
Yes, and if you would have had to have purchased a license or qualified for a license in each one of those different, municipal or entities or whatever, I mean, you can imagine you might have to spend a couple $1,000s to have licenses to carry throughout the state.
Correct, yeah, interesting. So legislation just passed. You know, tell us about that legislation. I mean, obviously, I suspect that, like here in Wisconsin, you know, you might not have had everything that you wish to have in that legislation, give us the good, give us the bad, what you got, what you didn't get.
Well, that's exactly what we're calling it, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And the good is that we did get shall issue. All you have to do is fulfill the requirements, and they will issue you a license. We got statewide preemption, which means it will be the same, carry laws will be the same throughout the entire state. No city or county can place any further restrictions or make any changes to it.
Excellent.
That's the good. The bad we see is the license fee it's the highest in the country, and it's $150, but it's good for 5 years. That comes out to about $30 a year, and for a lot of folks, that won't be a problem. Our concern is for the folks in the inner city, in the poorest neighborhoods, tend to be the most dangerous neighborhoods, might be disenfranchised by this because they might not be able to afford the license. Right along with that is the 16 hours of training. Speaker Mike Madigan said in his floor debate that he was determined to have the strictest training requirements of any state in the nation, and that's why the 16 hours. That also, for a lot of folks, won't be a problem, but for those who have limited funds, that could be an issue. That could be a real issue. So that's the bad. It's doable, but it's not the optimum. The ugly is some of the restricted places. Mainly the one I'm concerned about is the mass transportation. I don't use mass transportation, but I have friends in Chicago and Cook County that do. That's their only means of transportation. And if you can't carry there, then, you know, that's a situation that, and it tends to be the most dangerous situations, waiting for at a bus stop, you know, late at night or early in the morning, or sometimes in the middle of the day if you listen to all the crime reports, and or are waiting for the train at the train station, you're on the platform by yourself. You can have, with this, you can have the firearm with you as long as it's unloaded and enclosed in a case. But, you know, if you're in a dangerous situation, that's not the condition that you want your gun to be in.
So basically, if you're a criminal in Illinois, wait for someone to get off of the L, and you've got an easy target.
Right. And anybody that, you know, crime element that's wanting to target, you know, find an easy target, easy prey, that's the areas that they could go look, and they would know those folks aren't able to protect themselves. One of the nice things with the bill, if it's signed into law, is there is a safe pass through for people traveling through Illinois. You can have your gun in your vehicle, and it can be loaded, and, you know, where you could get to it if you needed it, but you won't be able to take it outside of your car or your
gotcha.
Vehicle. But you can actually, that business about people traveling through, you know, going through Chicago to go, you know, to Wisconsin or to go across the state, they won't be able to do that gotcha where, you know, they were legal before they crossed the state line, then all of a sudden they're in Illinois and they're targeted for a felony or whatever because they've got a loaded firearm in their vehicle. That will be gone.
Good. So that's an interesting or an important thing for our listeners, and well, we have listeners across the country, but for our listeners to know is that when if this law is signed and when it goes into effect, they will be able to keep their gun in their car as they pass through.
Right. You only have to stop at the state line and unload and case it up like we've had to do for decades.
Yep. And I know this kind of thing works itself out over time, as it has here in Wisconsin. Any initiative on reciprocity, do you know, is that part of the legislation now, or is that something that
no,
that
currently, you know, you would think that we've got 49 other test cases out there that these legislators would look at. But no, they say, this is so new to Illinois, we don't want to be recognizing other states' licenses and get all caught up into all of that confusion while we're getting our, you know, feet on the ground with this, which, you know, I think is a bit of nonsense. So we don't have reciprocity right now, but that's something we're going to work toward in the next few years. And I think once, like it has in other states, once the law is in effect and they see that there's no blood in the streets, you know, scenarios, or people aren't shooting each other over parking spaces or shopping carts, when they see that this is handled just as well and just as safely as the other states have done it, then they'll start loosening up. It is possible, though, that anybody that wants to get an Illinois license, they can do that by taking, you know, the training that will be accepted, an out-of-state license that was going to be like $300. But it is possible to get it if you want to carry in the state of Illinois.
Good. So I think the last comment that I had was that, you know, it'll be interesting to see, because, you know, you mentioned some of the myths, that the same thing that we heard here. It's so shocking that, you know, Wisconsin being the 48th and now, or was it the 49th, and Illinois being the 50th state that allows some form of concealed carry, and you still hear people talking about those myths, the shootouts in the streets and everything else. In today's information age, it shocks me that educated people, even though they're anti-gun, are still willing to
make repeat those myths. Yes, they seem to hang on to those.
I think one of the hopes that I have is that the bill and the legislation is expansive enough so that we'll be able to see the true impact, because we've believed this, obviously, I'm sure you have as well, for years, that the reason Illinois has, excuse me, the reason Chicago has such a high crime rate, such a high murder rate, is not because of their strict, or their too many guns. It's because of their restrictive gun laws that protect criminals and impede the law abiding. So it'll be interesting to see if you have some high profile self-defense shootings by concealed carry holders like we've had here in Wisconsin, and see what kind of a deterrent effect that has.
Right.
And hopefully enough of the people who live in those dangerous areas, the most dangerous areas, are able to get their permits and able to start to exercise the right to carry, so that we can see the benefit that will happen if they're able to exercise that right.
Right. It'll be very interesting to have the same conversation a year or 2 years from now. It'll be, you know, just to take a look and see. I think Illinois will be just like all the other states that have these surprising reports. You know, crime did not go up with the right to carry. You know, I think they will see that over time, as people get their licenses, it'll take a while, you know, for it to get up and going and enough people to get their licenses. But I think you're going to see crime drop in Chicago tremendously, at least violent crime against women and against the elderly.
Yeah, let's hope. Well, Belinda, I want to thank you so much for coming on tonight. Thanks for bearing with us with our technical issues, getting you hooked up on the line. Tell us as we go, because I know we have listeners from Illinois, your website, how people can get a hold of your organization.
Yes, IllinoisCarry.com, and you spell it all out, IllinoisCarry.com. And you go to the homepage and click on forums, and in our discussion forums, that's where we have up-to-date Second Amendment news 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and some wonderful volunteers. It's an all-volunteer organization that keeps everything up and running.
Excellent. Well, Belinda, it's so great to talk to you, and we will talk to you soon. Carry on.
It's nice talking to you, too.
Thanks, Belinda.
And it's great to join you, hopefully, when the governor signs this into law as a concealed carry state.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, you bet.
We'll talk to you soon.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that was Belinda Rowe, spokesperson for Illinois Carry, a great lady. I started talking with her, working with her a couple of years ago, and glad to have her on. Again, that's my and I'm going to tell you a secret of hosting a radio show. When you have a topic, you could spend a lot. I could have spent a lot of time researching Illinois laws, but instead, you just have know a little bit enough to ask a few questions and have an expert on and save yourself the research time. So, my little cheater secret there. Next topic that I want to jump into: Second Amendment hypocrites. This one hopefully will get some good calls on. We're running about 8:45 here. I might go to 9:30 today. We'll see how the time shakes out. But Second Amendment hypocrites. I'm going to take a short play. I like to play these, and there's actually a third one out now. Sheriff Clark has the public service announcements that he's done with regard to protecting yourself and exercising your right to protect yourself. So I'm going to play one of these while I take a little break for a sip of water here, and then we'll get into Second Amendment hypocrites after this real short break. See you in 30 seconds.
This is Sheriff David Clark. Violent crime went up nearly 10% in Milwaukee. Are you the next victim? You don't have to be, but that's your call. Armed criminals are being put back on the street by a soft on crime court system even before the ink dries on police reports. Are you prepared to handle a life or death threat? Wisconsin's Personal Protection Act now gives you the same advantage that I have. Now it's the crook who has to wonder what you might do. Can be a great equalizer, but you always have to think survival. Remember, it's you and me now.
This public safety message brought to you by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office.
So that was Sheriff David Clark. And now I'm going to do a little live troubleshooting here. If you're listening and using the Flash chat, let me know if that audio came through garbled. It was a little garbled on my monitors here. So, hypocrites. We've got this is a topic that I've had kind of on the docket for a couple weeks, a couple shows. And when I talk about Second Amendment hypocrites, I think there's a few different angles to go with this. And one of them is there's a lot of people out there who think that mandatory training is a good thing. So there are people that support the right to carry, but they also support training mandates, permits, and they don't see that those licensing requirements are an infringement on the right to carry. There's others like myself who believe that the Second Amendment is pretty clear that shall not be infringed means just what it says, that the right to carry shall not be infringed. So I would pose the question that if you say that you support the Second Amendment, but you also believe that it's okay or that people should have to pass a back, I'll say it, you know, mandatory training, a permit, a license, I believe that those people that say they support the Second Amendment but also don't have a problem and support mandatory training and permits, I would call that a Second Amendment hypocrite. I don't think that the Second Amendment, when it said shall not be infringed, intended that people should have to get a permit or a license to exercise their right to self-defense. I'm not of the belief that taking the Second Amendment, taking the right to carry and applying a permit to it makes it not a right. I just believe that that's an infringement on a right. So I'm interested to hear from people who say that they support the Second Amendment and ask yourself, do you think there should be permits and mandatory training? If so, I would pose the question, don't you feel like a hypocrite? A couple other angles that I want to take on that one, but I'm going to start with that one. We'll take some calls. We've got Bob from Elkhorn here, so I'm going to put Bob on. Hopefully, as I put Bob on here, we don't have any technical issues. Bob from Elkhorn, welcome to Wild Armed Radio.
Nick, it's a pleasure to talk to a person with wisdom between your ears rather than snot.
Well, I got a little bit of both from time to time, but thank you for that.
Okay. First of all, I agree wholeheartedly with Nora. The only thing we have to fear are the politicians that don't follow the state and U.S. Constitution. They seem to know better.
Yeah, I mean, we have a Constitution to protect our rights. And it seems like this has been completely flipped, where now we have legislators, and that's the protections that we seem to need now, is protection from legislators.
Exactly. That's the absolute fact. Look at down in Cook County in Chicago. They have good basic people on there, the vast majority of them are law-abiding good citizens, yet they keep reelecting these corrupt politicians who control them.
And that's the part that I find most, I'll call it offensive, I'll call it shocking. And it is, you know, how much of it can you blame on ignorance, and how much of it do you just have to not even call it a conspiracy theory, but just call it a disregard for the lives of their constituents? I mean, these are people that have no ability to defend themselves if they're not allowed to carry. And then these politicians who profess to be, I think, the most incompassionate politicians in the world are those who would take away your right to defend yourself. And that's what we see there in Cook County, and of all the places where people can document, where it's evident on a daily basis watching the news that you have such a high need, such a risk of being a victim of crime, and they're denying the right to protect yourself down there.
That's an absolute fact. Furthermore, I don't care, in the worst neighborhood in any city in the U.S., 99% of the residents in those bad areas are law-abiding citizens, okay? They have no education. They're minimal wage, minimal income. Therefore, they're doomed by their birthright.
And now we see in Illinois, it's great that Illinois passed this concealed carry law, but and Valinda, I thought she was a great speaker to their new legislation, but these people down in Illinois, especially the ones that are in the most high crime areas, I have to question if a lot of them are going to be able to drop $150 for a permit. And then in addition, they have a 16-hour training requirement. Now, I know that Wisconsin Carry gives away free training, but it's not 16. If there was 16 hours of training that was required, we certainly would still be trying to do our free concealed carry classes, but our ability to get people through those would be severely limited. So with that said, training doesn't come free. And here in Illinois, I question how many people, 16 hours of training, that's, if a four-hour class in Wisconsin, the places that charge for those generally charge about $100, I can't imagine what a 16-hour class is going to cost someone, and I can't imagine that there's got to be millions of people who are going to be practically foreclosed from their right to carry, because that's just going to be out of reach for them.
Well, certainly, and this is also a factor. The vast majority of inner-city people don't have vehicles. They use public transportation. What if it's out of the area of public transportation? Then they can't even get there.
And how interesting was it that in their legislation they've banned carry from public transit? And Illinois is a place where this is a little known secret, and I really admit to it, but I went to college for a semester at DePaul University in Chicago before I transferred to UW and finished up there. But I mean, there's a huge percentage of the population down there that all they use is mass transit. So you're pretty much, when you ban carry on mass transit, you're pretty much banning carry for, you know, all the people who use that as their transportation. It's another practical foreclosure. And it would be different because here in, you know, Milwaukee, there's still people that use mass transit, but the percentage of the population is so much smaller than in Chicago, where everyone from, you know, businessmen on down and across the scope of, you know, students, everybody uses mass transit to get around down there.
Oh, sure, parking. Look at parking down there. If you park at a meter in the downtown section, it's $7.50 an hour.
And that is the reason why the closest when I get to Chicago is on my boat sitting on Lake Michigan.
There you go. You're a sailor, too, needless to say, right?
Well, I prefer a motor. Sailing's a lot of work, so I like straight. Sailors, they go back and forth to get where they want to go. I just point the bow there and go. So, okay. Well, Bob, thanks for calling in. What are you packing tonight?
Indeed, I'm packing a Ruger LC380.
Excellent. Well, Bob, thanks for calling in. Thanks for being well-armed.
God bless. Stay safe.
Have
Bye-bye.
A good night. So, good call from Bob there, and great discussion of a follow-up to some of the things that Valinda talked about. And, you know, Illinois legislation is you know, a great first step for them. But I do think of it. I know how many people in Illinois use mass transit and how much that's going to affect the practical ability to exercise your right to carry down there. But so back to Second Amendment hypocrites. I'm really hoping to kick a hornet's nest here and get some people to call in and disagree with me or debate me on this. But so my first charge of Second Amendment hypocrisy is people who say that they support the Second Amendment but are okay with permits and mandatory training. So I'm going to throw that one out there if anybody would like to challenge me on that. My second angle that I was going to take on this is the more recent one. There's a lot of people who, during the post-Sandy Hook discussion, where I've heard people say that, and I'll take two sides to this one. I've heard some people say that, you know, you should be able to carry, because the Second Amendment says that the right shall not be infringed, you should be able to have high-capacity magazines, you should be able to have the type of weaponry that you want. And I agree with that. And then some of those same people who would use that shall not be infringed mantra when it comes to high-capacity magazines, hollow-point bullets, assault weapons, modern sporting rifles. I don't really have a problem with the term assault weapon, but a lot of people have told me that I should use modern sporting rifle as my use modern sporting rifle in place of it. But a lot of people, of course, a lot of people think AR stands for assault rifle. It's actually for Armalite rifle. But there are people who will cite the shall not be infringed portion of the Second Amendment when they talk about high capacity magazines, you know, collapsible stocks, barrel shrouds, all the things that the assault weapons ban had proposed to make illegal. And then those same people who would cite the uninfringed clause of the Second Amendment for those topics, for those debates, are, again, I'm going to go back to people who don't support constitutional carry, who think that it's okay to have a permit, that it's okay, that the Second Amendment somehow is not, that it's not an infringement to have a permit or a license. And there's a lot of people, when Wisconsin Carry started pushing for constitutional carry, when we got shall issue, there was a huge number of people who not just thought that constitutional carry was too much for us to obtain and that we were going to upset the apple cart and why not just take the easy win and get a shall issue, but there were people who genuinely didn't support constitutional carry, and yet those same people would sit there and say that they support the Second Amendment, and they don't. Another angle that I was going to throw out there for people who call themselves Second Amendment supporters. And I think, I mean, there's gun shops in Milwaukee that, quite frankly, call themselves Second Amendment supporters. And I'm going to throw one under the bus right now. And unfortunately now add this to the list of organizations that will never be future sponsors of Well-Armed Radio, but Shooter Shop in West Dallas. As soon as open carry became legal, because it's always been legal, but very quickly after J.B. Van Hollen in 2009 issued his memo that open carry was not disorderly conduct. At that same time, Shooter Shop came out and said that they support the Second Amendment and they support open carry, but you can't do it in their store. And just what a load of hypocrisy. And I understand their whole, well, here people are handling guns, and I get that whole thing. But then the sign that should have gone up on the door should have been, you know, openly carried guns may not leave their holster, save the need to use it for self-defense. But it's interesting now, over the past year or two, every time local media goes to the Shooter Shop for comment on the permit process, the training process, the Shooter Shop is one of the first places to throw our current standards under the bus as far as not being adequate and call it that there should be more of a training requirement, more. The Shooter Shop wants to, they've been on local media talking about how they want to see the gun show loophole. They call it, well, the gun show loophole as the media calls it, which we all know is not a gun show loophole, but the private party exception. They want to see that removed, limited, taken away. And of course, we know why, because who else would rather have every person who wants to buy a gun come to a gun store but a gun store? So certainly they hate to see private property sale legal, because in their view, that costs them business. So again, all these people who call themselves Second Amendment supporters, and I'm going to call them Second Amendment hypocrites for that very reason. There's another angle that I was going to take here. Before I get to my next angle, I wanted to make a comment of one of the frustrations that we've seen in even pre-Act 35 was just the influence of the training lobby, the paid-for training lobby on right to carry. I think a lot of people, and I understand that a lot of people's principles seem to stop at their pocketbook. So there's a lot of people out there who call themselves Second Amendment supporters, but they are for-profit gun trainers. And, of course, we have Wisconsin Carry, and me personally, I have no problem with people who make their living selling training services. What I do have a problem with is people who ask the government to force people to come to their door and pay for training services in order to exercise their constitutional right to self-defense. And that I have a problem with. And that's what I think we see here in Wisconsin, is I think there's a lot of people who call themselves Second Amendment supporters who are now firearms instructors. And quite frankly, just like the insurance industry lobbies for you to be required to have, required to have mandatory insurance, there's a lot of people who, in the same vein, are asking for or support these training mandates so that there's a line of people that have to come to their door for training. I think that's short-sighted. In Arizona, when they passed constitutional carry, training organizations were flooded with people seeking training once they knew that they could carry without a permit, without these mandatory without training mandates from the state. There's a lot of people who said, hey, now is the time that I'm going to begin to exercise my right to carry. And the gun training industry saw a huge, huge spike. And it's unfortunate that there's trainers in Wisconsin that don't support constitutional carry because they want that line of people to their door. And in the same vein, just like, and you'll hear all the arguments, well, if we don't have training mandates, people will be doing stupid things with their guns, and then we're going to lose our right to carry because we're giving ammunition to the anti-gun folks, and that hasn't proven itself true in any other states. But it is unfortunate that there now are people who otherwise, if not for their belief that they need that training mandate to make money, would be supporting constitutional carry. So I'm going to throw them out there as Second Amendment hypocrites too. So we haven't gotten any calls on this one. So apparently either no one wants to challenge my accusation of them being a Second Amendment hypocrite, or just as likely the listeners of this show get it and don't want to disagree. So we're running 9 o'clock here, probably another half hour here to go. So I think the next topic I want to jump into is posted businesses. When it comes to posted businesses, there's a lot of differing opinions. I'd actually tried to get one of the owners of Built Right Furniture on the show tonight because I had an interesting experience with her over a year ago. It was after Act 35 passed. But I went in there shopping for furniture, and as I drove by, I saw a no gun sign on the door. So I left my gun in the car and I went inside, left my business card for my real job. I didn't want to go in and say that I was with Wisconsin Carry, because the fact of the matter is that I don't want to, when I go into a business and ask them why they're posted or offer my opinion as a customer of theirs that they shouldn't post, I don't want to look like anything other than their quintessential typical customer. So I don't go in and announce myself as I'm Nick Clark. I'm the chairman of Wisconsin Carry. I just go in as a as a customer. And I think that's the best option for all of us to do is, you know, we had a question earlier this week on the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page of why should we put the Wisconsin Carry logo on, should we put the Wisconsin Carry logo on some of those no guns, no money business cards? And I had suggested that we would not want that logo on those business cards for a couple of reasons. And one was because, you know, I know a lot of people would be judicious and polite when they go into a business. But I think there's other people who would just go in and throw a card in, on the counter and say, I'm not going to patronize this bleeping establishment until you, you know, take down your anti-gun sign and respect my Second Amendment rights. And that rude kind of approach isn't something that we'd then want someone to look down and see the Wisconsin Carry logo. But the greater point there is that there is a right way, I think, to approach businesses that are posted, and then there's a wrong way. And the best way is to approach them as a typical customer of theirs. You know, businesses spend thousands and some businesses millions of dollars to attract customers, and most of them even have a a metric where they know the cost per customer, how much advertising dollars it takes them to gain a customer. But if you're that typical customer who their advertising worked on and you walk in the door and then you can't patronize it and you're not a gun activist, you're just a regular Joe, I think that is more impactful. You know, when you step into a store, it shouldn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're a member of the NRA, you know, Wisconsin Carry, PETA, or anything else. What matters is you are a customer and you are there to spend money, but you aren't. You want to appear as the average Joe customer, not some gun activist. As I said, when I speak to store managers, I don't tell them who I am. There's a friend or foe website that a lot of people reference. I actually don't like the friend or foe website for a couple reasons. First, it makes it too easy for people not to go into a store or a restaurant or wherever and instead just avoid it altogether because it's posted. If you can sit there at your computer and see that a place that you were thinking of going to is posted, you're obviously the odds of you actually picking up the phone or the odds of you going there are slim to none. So therefore, that business probably won't know that they lost a customer. And that's one of the reasons I don't like friend or foe, because I would rather see people, I think it's more impactful if people walk in the door and either hand out the no guns, no money card, or just have a conversation with the manager, a real polite conversation with the manager. I think that's far more impactful. But when I talked with Built Right Furniture, I had a conversation, left my card, my regular business card, not my Wisconsin Carry card as my role in president and chairman. But I got a call from the manager. We talked about some things, her concerns, and you know, in her particular case, she cited the insurance concern. And when I mentioned that Wisconsin, unlike other states, has an immunity provision, she went back to her insurance company with that, who researched it and said, yes, indeed, that's true, and their signs came down. So that was a great example of how, and when I talked to that the owner of that company, she herself was very pro-gun. So there's a sign on the business where the owner was actually pro-gun, and it was the case of her insurance company recommending that that's what she do. So I think that's something to keep in mind when you go into these places is to understand that a lot of these places might not be anti-gun. They just might be uninformed. So, you know, probably a year ago, someone messaged me about what the best way to make contact with the manager or owner when you go into a posted business was. So I shared my approach with them, and I think it's a germane for this topic here today. But, you know, first, if you're looking for a quick and easy answer or the type of person to expect someone else to do the heavy lifting, you know, I don't think this topic is for you, because taking action to affect the decision-making process of a business is going to require some effort and some thought. But if you're the type to take the initiative yourself, and when you see something that needs to be done, you're the type to do it, I think, you know, you might find some useful information in what I'm about to say. First, I'd say that when it comes to personal contact with the owner or manager of a store, you know, all contact is good contact. So face-to-face contact is positive. Even if you aren't the world's greatest negotiator or debater, even just 3 minutes to say hi and tell the owner or manager of a store, I just want to let you know that I can't shop here because of your policy. I mean, that's good contact. You don't have to be able to debate them point by point. But if you just, as a customer, express your viewpoint that's going to have a positive effect, and hopefully in combination with other customers doing the same. With that said, you can definitely be even more effective if you plan your conversation ahead of time. An approach methodology that worked well for me was first, I always want to make sure I'm barking up the right tree, meaning the person I'm talking to is either the person who made the decision or a person who would have strong influence on the person who made the decision. So my first question is generally to, you know, go to a customer service counter to ask the counter clerk, is there a store manager or owner I could speak with? And if they say about what, then I would just say, you know, the firearms, the no firearms policy. And then once I get in front of the right person, generally I start by introducing myself. And again, not as Wisconsin Carry's chairman. I just ask a few probing questions that I might say hi. You know, use their name. It helps you remember their name, and your conversation is now becoming personal because you called them by name. But I would say, hi, Miss or Mrs. So-and-so. You know, I'm Nick Clark. I've been a customer here for several years. And if it's the first time that you were there, I mean, say that. If you've been a customer there for years, say that. But, you know, explain to them that you came to their store from wherever you live. In my case, New Berlin, came to your store from New Berlin today to shop for some, whatever. And at that point, you're establishing yourself as a valued longtime customer. If you are, and if you're not, don't lie. Don't say, you know, I shop here all the time if you really don't. But if you're there for the first time, be honest about that. But let them know you had a purchase in mind and you've made yourself a likely customer because you intend on buying something. If you were to just call on the phone, I mean, anybody could look at a list and start calling anti-gun businesses on the phone and say, you know, I'm not going to come there. But when you were there, that really says a lot that you were a customer there and ready to spend money. Share with that business, you know, how you heard about them. So if you heard about that business from a radio advertisement or an advertisement in the paper, that's when you go in to talk about their no gun sign, that is something to mention. Because these companies spend big money on radio, big money on direct mail, big money on print advertisements, television advertisements. So if you saw an advertisement and you went into a place and they were posted, say that. Say, I got your flyer in the mail about your sale, or I saw your TV ad for whatever, or, you know, a friend of mine has purchased lots of whatever widgets from here. This serves to let them know that their marketing efforts worked. They got a customer who was a high likelihood to make a purchase in their store. You know, companies, as I mentioned earlier, spend a lot of money to get people in the door, and you want to position yourself as that person that their marketing expenditures paid off on. If you walk in as that person that their marketing expenditures paid off on, but you can't make a purchase because of their no gun sign, I mean, that's really going to cause that business owner to stop and think. So, you know, you're positioned as a real customer, or a high likelihood customer. You're now speaking to the person who's able to have an impact on that policy. Then I say something like, you know, I'm concerned about your no firearm sign on the door. Is that a local decision or a corporate one? Because you might even be talking to a manager, but they might not be. They might be assistant manager, or they might be a manager of a corporate owned store. Obviously, if you know that you're in a mom and pop store, you know it's local, but a lot of retail places, it could be somebody at corporate. But I ask that question, you know, when you ask if that's a local decision or a corporate one, it has three purposes. First, you want to probe the person's position on the issue. You know, maybe they're a friendly corporate, or maybe they could be a friendly to right to carry type of person, and they said, oh, corporate made them put up, and they're eager to hear from real customers so they can report back to corporate and say, hey, we're losing customers because of this. You know, they could be a neutral person who just heard some robot anti-position from the local chamber of commerce about the issue, not knowing anything about guns themselves, and just did the knee-jerk thing and posted. Or maybe they are pro-gun, but they were scared they'd lose customers if they didn't post. So that's the first thing you want to do there, is you're just asking that question about if that decision was local or corporate. You're beginning to gather information before you start to state your position. But second thing, the second part of that question is to determine if they are the person who can make the change, or if you want to talk to some, or if you need to talk to someone else. Why waste your time speaking to someone who can't actually affect the change? That's a waste of your resources. But you're hinting to them that you don't like the policy, so that if they are otherwise supportive, they could find common ground with you right away. This will make the rest of your conversation a whole lot easier. But all three reasons for asking these questions give you information to target your response. So once you find out who made the decision and perhaps get some hints as to their personal feelings on the issue, and then address the question very specifically, do you know what their reasons were for, you know, banning carry in here? Or if this person that you're talking to turns out to be the actual decision maker, you know, just ask, you know, could I ask what your reasons were? Once you find out, you want to find out how they came to their decision. Maybe they had a rabid, maybe they're just a rabid anti-gun, you know, communist. You want to know this. Maybe they're pro-gun, but they throw out the insurance company made me do it line. Maybe you want to know what their reasoning was, because your response can be more targeted at that point. If you just go in and say, you know, I can't shop here because you don't allow carry, you could be a lot more effective if you choose to make that targeted response and get in front of the right person, ask some probing questions, and then respond specifically to why they put up that sign if you get to a decision maker type person. So now, you know, at that point, with the questions that you've asked, you know who made the decision and why, and now it's time to deliver your targeted response. You know, your response will vary depending on the information that you just gathered, but if they say, you know, I'm pro-gun, but our insurance company made us do it, then you can reply that, you know, Act 35 provides immunity for businesses if they allow carry. You know, research that some more, but basically if businesses allow carry, they are immune from liability from anything that results from that decision. So if they choose to allow carry and a concealed carry permit holder comes in there and tries to break up an armed robbery and accidentally shoots a baby in a stroller that's getting through the store, I mean, the store actually has immunity from liability in allowing, by statute, in allowing you to carry in that store. So that's something that many businesses might not be aware of. But, you know, if you get someone that says, hey, I hate guns and think they should all be banned and I don't care what you or any other gun nut wants, I mean, if they are the actual owner decision maker, then that's something you probably don't want to waste your time with. You're probably not going to change their mind. And the floor of a retail store isn't the place to engage in an extended debate, but it's just a chance to share your view and offer a few targeted comments. And if they say they hate guns and people who own them, but, you know, they are a manager and they may have posted the store without corporate approval, I mean, that's something that you might want to know as well. That's an opportunity to go over their head and call corporate, and you have nothing to lose at that point. But, you know, other things that they might say, you know, they can say, this is a safe store, we have security, we've never had any crime here. I mean, you can always talk about, you know, someone walking from the store to their vehicle. You could always use the scare tactics that criminals could begin to target stores that are posted. You know, sit in their car and look to see who walks into your door, sees a sign, walks back to their car, and then goes back in the store, which is going to tell a criminal, hey, that person just left a gun in their car because they saw the no gun sign. So those are other things you can mention. But, you know, you might find a business that's posted pro-gun and says, you know, I didn't agree with it, but corporate made them do it, in which case ask for a name at corporate and talk to someone at corporate about the policy. Person could be neutral who just never thought about it. And when you ask them, you know, do you think your sign will stop a criminal from carrying in there or stop a crazy lunatic from coming in here? You know, they might give it some thought that they previously hadn't and realized how foolish their sign was. But there's a limitless number of possible replies depending on the information you gathered. But at the end of the conversation, you know, you may have gotten some positive feedback, you may not have, but that's just a tactic that I would suggest when it comes to posted businesses. Positive personal contact with the right person, establish yourself as a customer or potential customer, hold their position, because their position might be different than corporate's. You know, probe the reasoning behind the decision itself. You know, deliver your targeted response with facts and logic and provide an incentive for them to change their policy. You know, don't go into a place and say, I'm never doing business here again, but go into a place and say, hey, leave your number, and if you guys ever change your policy, please give me a call because I'd like to come back here and do some business with you. That's a great way to get these businesses to change their policy, is when they know that here's a customer sitting out there waiting to do business with us. That happened to me with a store here in Milwaukee. There's a store in West Dallas, a supplement warehouse, where I buy a lot of supplements. I'm a bodybuilder, so I spend about $250 a month on supplements. And I went to a local store, and all of a sudden one day, I mean, I open carried in there before Act 35, and then Act 35 passed, and all of a sudden, boom, no gun sign. So I actually opened the door, literally poked my head and didn't walk in and said, you guys don't allow guns in here? They said no, and I said, oh, and they knew that I'd been coming in there for years. I've been going to that place for about 13 years. So then I called corporate, and which is in Oak Creek, left a message there, got a call back. And then I started, and, you know, they were going to research their policy, and they said they did. Of course, literally like a week after that, the Oak Creek Sick Temple shooting happened, which I thought might give them cause to think about allowing carry, but instead probably freaked them out a little bit more. But then over time, I started purchasing from somewhere else. I mean, and I did the math for them. I said, I've been coming to your store for like 13 years, and I spend about $250 a month. And I think at the calculation I did at the time, I want to say that was like $30,000 or $40,000 worth of product that I purchased there. And, you know, told them that I love their service and their prices and their product selection, and I'd be happy to come back as a customer as soon as their policy changed. And coincidentally, a member of the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page actually works there. But I also started placing my orders online through a different source, and then I would scan and mail my receipts to Supplement Warehouse to prove to them, hey, I'm spending all this money with someone else. And between that and the person who works there started to work on them, and they took their signs down. So it does work. If you contact these businesses, they'll take their signs down. But what doesn't work is looking at friend or foe, seeing a place is posted, which might not even be posted because friend or foe can notoriously be out of date. And so if you have a story, you know, if you've had contact with a business who was posted and took their signs down, you know, feel free to call into the show now. I'd be interested to hear your story, your success story, if you were able to talk to a business that took their signs down. 646-716-8739 is our phone number. But that was my topic there. If we don't get any calls on that, I've got about 10 minutes left, and I can jump into my off-topic segment here, which some of you might find interesting. Some of you might click off the feed if you're not interested in Wall Street and investing. But in closing, when it comes to posted businesses, just a few other things to say is friend or foe is notoriously out of date. There's businesses that have taken down their sign that are still posted no carry on friend or foe. I've seen places that it were posted that they don't allow carry, and I walked up to them and there's no signs. So be real leery of friend or foe. I think it's not the resource that it could be. But also, you know, make sure that you're making positive contact with businesses. Don't call businesses and ask them if they're posted, because you're going to get some person on the phone who is just going to make a knee-jerk, uninformed decision and probably just say no. So don't call places and ask them if they allow carry. It's just a bad tactic. It's not you're going to get misinformation more often than you get good information. And that happened to me at a place, Horn Eagle Brewery. I tend to go there a lot. We take the boat there, me and my fiance and the kids, and I called ahead. Someone told me they were posted. I called ahead and asked if they were posted. They said they were, that they didn't allow guns. I asked to speak to a manager, and eventually got to a person who said, oh, actually we're not posted. And I went, and sure enough, they were not posted. So I went there and ate, had a burger, and told the manager, hey, thanks for not being posted. But at the same point, the first person I talked to on the phone said they were posted. So that's why I don't call. Don't ask places if they're posted. You know, don't use friend or foe. Show up, walk in, have a polite conversation. That's your best tactic. So that's that. 9:22, I got about another 10 minutes here. So I want to go into my off-topic segment of the day. And this, my reason for doing this topic, what prompted me to think of having this discussion was precipitated by a few weeks ago, maybe now it's closer to almost a month ago. If any of you pay attention to investing, there was the Associated Press's Twitter account was hacked, and when it was, the stock market immediately dropped. Associated Press's Twitter account was hacked, and there was a false posting that said that the White House had been there was a terror attack at the White House. I can't remember everything that hacked Twitter post from the Associated Press had said. I recall that you know, it was about a terrorist attack at the White House. But as soon as that happened, the Associated Press's Twitter account was hacked, and there was this break. Oh, I remember what it was. It was a breaking news: 2 explosions in the White House, and President Obama is injured. That went out to 1.9 million followers of the Associated Press's Twitter account. So within seconds. The stock market crashed. I mean, they went spiraling down. So Mark Cuban, who is a obviously, he's owner of the Dallas Mavericks, businessman. I've paid attention to him for a while. You might see him on Shark Tank as well. I like his style. I read his book, How to Win at the Sport of Business. It's like $3 ebook. You can buy it. And it was a good read. I hadn't read books for years, and I started reading books recently within the past year, which could be another topic for the radio program, the Well Armed Radio Book Club. My take on Mark Cuban is that he's generally got a pretty good libertarian bend to him, but of course now with Shark Tank and his business interests, his financial interests being more dependent, and even as the owner of the Dallas Mavericks, he tries to keep a pretty middle of the road perspective in public comments, so as not to tick off, you know, half the population who votes for one person or another. But his comments, I think, are always pretty spot on. And what I really like about Mark Cuban is that he's got this like damn the torpedoes attitude, and he's not afraid to say what's on his mind, not afraid to talk about the inner workings of the stock market and things that, you know, that average Joe like me and you might not know. He's willing to tell it like it is. Side note, he recommends this book called The Number, which is supposed to really give you some insight into the stock market. But back to this this Twitter hat crack. So he has a post on his blog from May 2nd. I'm going to read a section here. Basically says the why did the market head lower so quickly? So there's this post from the Associated Press, Twitter account was hacked, terrorist attack in the White House, two explosions, President Obama injured, and the markets just drop. So why did the market head much lower so quickly? Here's from Mark Cuban's blog. The events of last Tuesday were likely caused by the news reaction algorithms that are designed to electronically read and interpret machine-readable news, said an email response by Irene Aldridge, a hedge fund consultant on algorithms and author of High Frequency Trading, blah, 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 practical guide. Most of the web content is machine readable, so a lot of algorithms are built on reading and reacting to news such as the Twitter hack, such as Twitter feeds, but in this case, the Twitter hack. So clearly in the Twitter case, trading machines do not ascertain the credibility of a tweet. So how does the future of HFT as high frequency trading look in light of Tuesday's AP hack tweet incident? It says a lot of, in terms of technology going forward, many algorithm designers will take into account Tuesday's situation with this fake hack post from Twitter, from the Associated Press, and build more sophisticated algorithms. But here's Mark Cuban's take on this, and I like it. He said, no one has any idea other than the traders using the algorithms which Twitter accounts the algorithms read and follow. The same with websites. Which do they track and read? If it's worth it for someone to hack the AP Twitter feed in order to attempt to destabilize the markets, why wouldn't the same people or others with similar goals set up thousands of Twitter accounts that for some extended period of time are a solid source of news and information, attempt to build a following that includes algorithms reading their feed, knowing that at some point they will tweet market-moving fake information? So think about that. What he's saying here is now that everybody, and if you read some of his other comments about investing, now that everybody's trying to, a lot of investing now with these high-frequency traders is not trying to invest in solid companies, but really trying to anticipate what people are going to buy in terms of stocks and get there first. So just be able to make your transaction quicker than someone else's transaction, and that's the way to make money. So you're not looking about value of companies and market fundamentals, but you're just trying to get to the place of the transaction and make yours first and make money at that with that methodology. So here he's saying that with these people that are trying to do that, they're making these algorithms that read information off the internet, news information, and forget an account being hacked. If security gets better and you can't hack the AP feed and you can't hack Fox News's feed, but they just set up fake organizations that for a year, you know, report, you know, on nightly business information service. And for a year, they just report business information and tweet out business information. But then without even having to be hacked, they start sharing false information that would, and then these algorithms react to that. I mean, that's the bigger picture here is to think about what the stock market is now. And it's Mark Cuban's final comments on this. Our markets are at risk. He can't quantify how big of a risk there is, but he can say as long as there are algorithmically driven trades that happen in thousandths of a second, they can't eliminate risk. As long as that risk exists, there is significant opportunity for hackers, terrorists, and crooks to negatively impact our market to the tune of billions of dollars and possibly to the tune of $1 billion and possibly that's a typo on their part, but this is the rise of the software controlled market. So what people don't understand is with the stock market now, there's so much that is so much bigger than even I is, and I do a lot of investing in stocks, but it's so much more complex than we can even fathom. And it really leaves you in a position of, as a law-abiding says, as a consumer, as a consumer investor, the ability for you to think that you can make money with stocks is there's people out there that are, it's kind of like playing chess against a chess expert. I mean, you know, you go with the best of intentions and you're going to invest, and then you realize that everybody that you're playing with is, I don't know if I could say cheating, but everybody that you're playing with has inside information. Everybody, you know, they know your moves before you make them. It's just, that's not a free market. This market manipulation. So this is where my comments and my spin on this is going to come in, is what I find frustrating. And I, over the last, you know, few years, as I've done more and more investing, what I've seen is that, you know, so many people take all their money and they shovel it into their company 401k, I mean, to invest for retirement, because that's the smart thing to do. Mutual funds, and what do they invest in? They invest in mutual funds. And I think mutual funds destroy have destroyed the investing world. And the reason I say that is because when you own a mutual fund, you don't own stock in the company. You own a stock in a mutual fund, and if you own stock in Ford, you know, I own stock in Ford, I own stock in City Group, I own stock in Williams Company, some energy stocks. I own a lot of individual company stocks, and I vote one vote per share, so I vote for their board of directors. When you own stock in mutual funds, you don't get to vote for the boards of directors. You don't get to have a say as an owner of that company. When I own a share of Ford, I own a piece of Ford, and I have a say, albeit a small one, if I only own one share. The people who can influence the board of directors own millions of shares. But when you own a mutual fund, it's the money managers who vote the proxies, who control the voting rights of all that stock. And so here you've got millionaire fund managers who, with your money, buy stocks. And they're going to pee back a return to you. But the bigger conspiracy is that now they vote all these golden parachutes and all this stuff where you see people who, you know, how does a board of directors that's accountable to the shareholders, how do they put these, you know, golden parachutes and reward these executives for failure in some cases? And the reason is because so much money is put into mutual funds, where the investor doesn't control the votes that stock entails, the money managers do. And to me, that is part of the problem with stocks investing, is what mutual funds have done is they've taken it away from people owning stocks. You know, people that used to, you know, decades ago, and they'd buy Ford and they'd own Ford, and they'd literally have people going to the annual meeting because they're interested in what the company is doing. And you don't have that anymore. You have millionaire mutual fund managers packing the boards of directors of these companies that they own and control the voting rights of the stock for. So that's not a free market, and that's a problem. And then think about, well, why does everybody shovel all this money into their 401k, their company-sponsored 401k? Well, the reason is because of tax policy. And so if people want to blame Wall Street for all this money coming into Wall Street and everything that they do to manipulate the market, the person we should really be blaming is Washington, D.C., because through tax policy and through lobbying legislators in D.C. for tax policy, that's why is it that if you save money for retirement, you know, it's an instant tax break. Any money that you shovel into your 401k, you don't have to pay tax on. You can defer the taxes on that. So it's like an instant return on investment, depending on what your tax bracket is. If you pay a 20% tax bracket, if you put your money into the company, you know, anything that you put into that retirement account, that money is an instant 20% return investment, because if you take that money as cash, as income payment, you're going to pay income tax on that year and lose 20%. So it's an instant 20% gain if you shovel it into your company-sponsored 401k, which is mutual funds. So, I mean, think about that. Someone went to D.C. and said, hey, here's a great idea. We want to get all this money coming to Wall Street. And the way to do that isn't to go encourage people to invest the hard way, like talk about value. Let's just go to the government and make an instant, through government tax policy, make an instant incentive for people to send all their money to Wall Street and let us handle their money, pee back a small return to them, but really use their money to manipulate the markets and make billions for ourselves. So I guess what I would say is, you know, we are part of the problem. We investors, myself included, who put money into our 401ks, we're feeding the monster. So something to keep in mind, and I'm not saying don't go fund your 401k because it's so tax advantageous to do so, but I will say be aware of the risk. You're feeding the monster. Don't think that money is safe from the government. Look at what they proposed in Cyprus. You think it can't happen here? I mean, give it some time. It won't be a blatant seizure. It'll come in the form of a tax, so it doesn't seem so out of the norm, but government has close tabs on all your tax-deferred 401k savings. I mean, someone lobbied the government to make it advantageous for you to contribute to your retirement account so that all these money management funds can make billions. How many people, if you could have the same advantage, or if you didn't have the tax advantages of throwing it into your retirement account, might invest in a small business? But instead, because of government policy, not Wall Street to blame, but government policy, people shovel, you know, think of the billions of dollars every year that the middle class sends to D.C. for their retirement. And all that, a lot of that goes there because of tax policy. Now Wall Street has all of your money to manipulate markets and do all this stuff. You know, when you hear you hear Mark Cuban talking about the inner workings of the market, of the stock market, and that's all your money going there and contributing to that viscosity. So, again, I'm not going to say don't fund your 401k because it's so tax advantageous to do so, but do understand that in doing so, we are feeding that monster. I try to take as much money as I can, pay my taxes, and then it's mine, and try to do investing outside of the retirement investing. Because, and again, look at what happened in Cyprus, where they went in and seized money from people. And if we think that can't happen here, the government very closely, because it's tax deferred, the government very closely tracks what you put into your retirement. So now the government has close tabs on your deferred 401k savings with reporting requirements from the institutions that manage those funds for you. That's a very easy target for future politicians. They may not seize that money, but mark my words, because that would just seem too blatant, but they'll tax you based on what you have. And so whether they actually seize the money that you have in your retirement account, or they just tax you based upon what you have and call it a tax, you know, we're not touching your retirement, we're just taxing you other income because you have so much set aside for retirement. I mean, that's something that I think people should really give some thought to when we talk about, the overreach of government. We look at the scandals going on in D.C. and we look at what's happening in other countries and people's assets being seized like happened in Cyprus. And again, don't think that that couldn't happen here. It's not going to be a blatant seizure of your money. They're not going to come in and say, we're taking money out of your, you know, if you have over $100,000 in your retirement account, you're going to, you know, we're taking $10,000 out. But what they're going to do is they're going to start having these, quantity-based measurements, and they'll say, well, people who have this much set aside for retirement, pay this tax rate. You're going to be taxed more because if you have money set aside for retirement. And in that and also all that money that the government, through their tax policy, brought to Wall Street, now they have tabs on. The IRS has tabs on that money. And trust me, that's a risk, and that's exposure. So it's just something to think about. My advice is to do everything that you can to find ways to invest your money outside of these government influenced means. So I'm not saying don't fund your 401k, but maybe think about how you could invest for better returns for yourself. Take the hit on the taxes, and is there a small business that you've thought of starting and you haven't? Give that some thought, because I think that if everybody in this country as investors paid more attention to their own money instead of just being lazy and giving it to a mutual fund company to manage your money, manipulate the market with your money, pack the boards of directors by voting the voting rights of the stocks that they're buying with your money. You know, it's all connected, and at the root of it all is government policy. The government is truly at the root of a lot of the problems that we have with Wall Street. So hopefully that wasn't too boring of a segment as I went off topic there, but just something that I've pondered over, you know, the last year or two as I invest and look at why people invest in mutual funds and how mutual funds have destroyed the market. So that puts us at about 9:40 here. I'm gonna wrap it up for the night. We'll see if I wonder if Dan fell asleep. We didn't have too many callers today. I guess I need to be more controversial. But maybe if Dan's listening, I'll pull him out of the screening room. I might have to wake him up here if he fell asleep. Are you there, Dan, or did you fall asleep over there in the screening room?
No, I'm still here.
Well, Dan, we didn't have a lot of callers tonight. We had Bob from Elkhorn. Was hoping we'd piss a few more people off, calling them Second Amendment hypocrites. But we didn't have. I think that's one of the things we have thousands of listeners every week to the show, but a lot of them listen to it from the archive podcast. So maybe tomorrow we'll have people watching the podcast screaming at their computer that I call them a Second Amendment hypocrite. But of course, at that point, they can't call in. So.
We've got some activity going on the Facebook feed.
Well, Dan, thanks for running the phones tonight, and we'll try to stir it up more next week and get some more callers in here. And I appreciate it, and we'll blame Hugh for the technical issues that we had there. Just out of curiosity, from your feed, did you hear when Valinda was on? Did you hear any static from her?
No, the only issue that we were seeing tonight was we were getting a little bit of crackle with your voice.
Huh, interesting. Well, good. Then it was just on my end, so I guess I still have hardware issues. Sounds like a personal problem, but all right, Dan, I'm gonna cut you loose, and we'll hit the exit music here. And thanks for your help tonight, and we will do this next Sunday.
Yeah, you bet. Carry on.
All right, be well armed. So with that, we're going to wrap it up for tonight. Thanks for tuning in. Definitely feel free to share your thoughts on the Well-Armed Radio Facebook page, facebook.com/WellArmedRadio. Feel free to share what you think might be a good topic for upcoming shows. And with that said, be well-armed.